And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. And this is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. We got a lot of topics that we'll be going over today. We've got one person in here from our community that I was going to really share some dialogue on with housing and social justice, but this is a show that is very ripe for call-ins at 826-7771. And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Coming off the back end of our fund drive, we really appreciate everybody who has helped us, and we're really excited that our Kahili Mountain antenna is working again. I know it's frustrated a number of you. Sorry for that. That's kind of part of what those donations help to fund, and it is our guy that really helps us with it. He came back. He was off island, so somebody's got a helicopter up there at the top of the mountain and climb up that antenna and fix it. How are you, Marshall?
I'm doing great, and really apologize to the people that couldn't hear us there for a while. I know I fielded some calls, and it was tough for some people, especially after having just donated. So apologies. We are back.
We're back. That's right. And I want to make sure Colleen Smith is, let me hear your voice. Say aloha.
Aloha, everyone.
Yes, and she's going to help us with a number of topics, but people might know you. You worked at the post office in Lihue.
Yes, I worked at the Lihue Air Stop Post Office. That's at the airport for 5 years. I've worked for the Postal Service for 28 and a half years before I retired.
And most of that time was on Oahu?
Yes.
You're from Oahu?
Mm-hmm. I've lived on Kauai for the last 10 years now.
Okay. And then your family's from Kauai, though.
Right. My grandmother was born and raised in Koloa. Her family's a sugar plantation family.
Oh. What's her last name?
Her last name's Watanabe. She's passed away for a while now.
Well, there's a lot of Watanabes on the island, so maybe
if there are any Watanabes that might be related to the Santokis on Oahu, I sure would like to connect up with you. I've been looking for the last 10 years and haven't been lucky so far.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, maybe we can help make that happen. So there is so many different things going on. One piece that we might have... Atreya might come in a little bit later in the show and give some first-hand knowledge on it, but I do want to share this series of events. This is the Oceans for Peace People. RIMPAC is happening right now. Those are the Rim of the Pacific. I believe there's 27 countries this summer. They come every other summer, and they practice basically their ability with their... defense weapons, or I like to call them defense, you know, defense, offense. It's, you know, how they're productive with those pieces, and it does have very much of an impact in the ocean. So this Friday night's event is called RIMPAC Impact, and so that is Friday, June 17th at 6 p.m. in the Kapa'a Library. That's a teach-in panel discussion. So it is about the Navy buildup and the effects on the coral reef and the effects on the whales. We've had some conversation that has overflow with that. We had some people in here that are studying the corals a week before last. Actually, last Tuesday. Last Tuesday, we had the people from that were looking at the expansion of Papahanaumokuakea, and that was Dr. Bob Richmond, who was in here from UH, who was a coral specialist, and there's a International Coral Reef Conference going on starting on Sunday and then through Friday next week on Oahu.
I was just going to ask, Felicia, you mentioned that it's going on now. The official website for RIMPAC, the Navy website, says it's June 30th to August 4th.
That's correct. So okay. I meant this summer. Thank you for clarifying that on me. It hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
But, I mean, all the build-up and the staging and getting ready for that.
Probably ships arriving in the area, possibly.
Yeah, and people arriving. And I'm sure that there is... You know, the people who've put this together over the years, Stu Burley is one of them, who is one of the founders of doing this. A lot of energy and ideas and creativity went into it, and at the same time, there's very real impact. So when there is the part about Papahanaumokuakea marine monument expansion, you know, that's going to protect the animals, but at the same time, these... war games happen in, you know, in the relative vicinity to it, and some of it's overlapping it. I haven't really seen a map of the overlap, but certainly a good portion of the same area that's in that marine monument also hosts I want to call them war games, but I mean it's kind of war games. They're practicing their defensive tactics with real missiles and things like that. I don't think most of them have active warheads on it, but they're practicing.
Did you go to any of the events on Papahanaumokuakea yesterday?
I did. I went. They came over here. They're probably still yet ready to fly away. We had Isaac and Tammy Harp. Paka is his. And then Kealoha Piskiote was here. Piskiota from the Big Island. And you know, the team that's here, Hoku Cody and Presley Wan, they went and they met at the different wharfs there at the boat harbor in Kekaha, Kikiola, then in Kapa'a, at the Kapa'a Library. I believe they were now Willy in the morning today. So, you know, they're making an effort to have some outreach.
What did you learn?
Well, given that I just did a show on it, I didn't learn new information, but I, you know, basically learning why they believe that it's the right thing, that by bringing Office of Hawaiian Affairs up as an equal partner, that they feel that they might have more impact at being able to stop some of the maybe heavy, intensive elements that are there. I would say one thing that I learned new, I've been talking about it, but something that Paka was emphasizing is for the longline fishing, that's who will be impacted the most by this expansion. And so of the longline fishermen, many of them are non-American fishers, you know, like kind of people coming from Southeast Asia, sometimes maybe not even in the best of working arrangements, but that the majority of whatever's fished in that area doesn't end up in Hawaii by the longline fishermen. And I think that the one of the biggest concerns of people who don't trust an expansion like that is that when we look at what's happened in the Marianas, the people aren't even allowed to fish around their own islands. They put all those islands right into the monument. And so these are fishing cultures. This is how they have lived for millennium, I mean, up until contact.
And there's no exception for them?
Basically, no. I mean, no, it's a problem for the Mariana Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a real problem for them. This one isn't going down the main Hawaiian islands, but people have concern that it will. And so I think the people who have a lot of concern, they speak about mission creep. So that's an aspect of it. But so what we will be seeing from that particular group, Thursday, June 23rd, 6 p.m., Kaloa Neighborhood Center, a film called Sonic Sea, which will also play at the Kapa'a Library on June 24th. That's for Friday. And then Sunday at the Princeville Neighborhood Center, that's June 26th. Golly, there are so many things happening that same day. There's the Manifest, the Xavier Rudd concert is here. Many, many things happening that same day. So, but that Sonic Sea that talks about all these intensive noises that are in the ocean, even just the shipping and the boats that go back and forth. When we have a whole economy that is based on all this shipping, it's very difficult for these animals that, you know, up until the last 100 years, they've basically had, I don't want to say a quiet ocean, but a natural ocean. And now they hear, you know, the sonar, all the testing, all the engines. And so Sonic Sea helps people to understand that impact.
Where's that showing?
On Thursday, June 23rd, Kaloa Neighborhood Center. Friday, June 24th, at the Kapa'a Library. And Sunday, June 26th, at the Princeville Neighborhood Center. And then in... you know, in July 1st at Kaloa Neighborhood Center, something called Why We Fight. I have seen that movie. It's going to be playing in Kaloa on the 1st, in Hanapepe on the 15th at the Hanapepe Library, and then on July 10th at the Kapa'a Neighborhood Center. Why We Fight is a very powerful movie. And it really talks about the business, the defense industry business. It's a very big business, and there's a business of war. So that's what that film is about. Also in this arrangement is a film called Oceans, and I'm not exactly sure what that one's about. We might have somebody come in later in the show and really give a little bit more detail on this, but that's something that is coming up. And... also, I was asked to announce, and I'm happy to do that, there is a workshop on dyslexia on next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, and that's going to be at Island School, and Elizabeth Scammerhorn is teaching that, and I'm going to go to that. It's at 6:30 at Island School, and it's called Journey into Dyslexia, and I know one of my sons had that challenge. I used to be a reading teacher Chapter One is what the program is called, and we didn't at that time have so much training on it, but I read a book on it. Once my kid was identified as having that, and I read and I learned and I understood where it's a different part of the brain, he was almost in sixth grade, and he learned to read that year when I really had a good understanding of it, and I could recognize he had that challenge from early on, so my friends would tease me because I started having him tutored in kindergarten. You know, and they're like, oh my gosh. But I you know, you can see certain signs of it. And I remember as a parent of a young child, and I would see him sitting on the bench at recess in kindergarten. I was just in a panic going, how am I going to keep him out of jail? How am I going to keep him out of jail? Because I would see year after year the kids who end up sitting on the bench at recess are the ones who end up in jail. And what they really need to do is go run around really hard, not sit still, you know, because it's... you know, reading is a very big block, and sometimes just being able to really read the ticket is difficult. And a lot of the, like, court orders are complicated when you can read. And if you struggle to read, it's definitely very difficult. And so one of my jokes is we incarcerate the poor and the poor readers. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of truth in that, though. Mm-hmm. Do you ever spend any time in court watching what happens? I'm talking to Colleen right now because she's nodding.
Yes, I have. And, yeah, reading, that old saying, reading is fundamental. It really is important. And I realize that nowadays kids are not really interested in reading books, or they don't really read. They're on the Internet and, you know, watching visual things. My son is 18 now. He just graduated from Kapa'a High School.
Oh, congratulations.
And I come across these really good books. You should read this. It's really good. It's a good book. I don't like to read. I don't learn from reading, Mom.
But they still read regularly, whether they're on the computer or on the internet or, or different methodology. So they still use it, but whether they read it in a long way, the particular son of mine that had a reading difficulty, he actually became a very avid reader.
You know? I would hope that for my son. That not right now. He's not interested in reading.
Yeah, so reading is a big deal. We have a caller on line one. I mean, on the phone. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to add to the conversation. I have a little grandson that is 8 years old, and he just loves to read. And he also would love to be on my telephone playing games, but we don't really let him too often. But it makes me so happy that he's such an avid reader. And you can do anything in life if you know how to read. You can pick up a how-to book. And so to really encourage our young folks to read or to play an instrument is just so helpful to their learning.
Yes, both of those are very important. And I see Kauai Christian Academy in Kilauea, they have a summer reading program. I know that the libraries right now have a summer reading program. Sometimes summer is really the time to invest in reading when you don't have a whole lot of homework.
Like at the Kilauea Pauhana Pizza, they have books out there, and it's just a little donation. And so when we go there, my, you know, grandsons and granddaughter, they like to get a little book, and we put the donation in, and there's really wonderful books. Oh, my goodness, I was so surprised. But it cracked me up because my grandson, that's 8, we went there, and he picked out the Bible, and he starts reading the Bible. And so I asked him the other day, oh, have you gotten far into the Bible? And he's like at the chapter of Abraham, you know, and it's really hard reading, I'm sure. I mean, I have a hard time with the Bible, the way that it's written. It's hard for me to understand. But anyway,
well,
reading is good.
That's wonderful. I know my kid that was having the difficult time reading, he learned to read really in, you know, nonfiction and technical books, you know, like Dungeons and Dragons manual and things like that. You know, it's like, wow, okay.
Yeah. Something that interests them. Like my grandson really got into reading about everything about Star Wars, like at the age of 7. And, you know, I take him to the library and he'd check out books, like, you know, 5 or 6 books, and he'd read them. You know, he didn't just look at the pictures. And, anyway, now he's reading like the series, The Diary of a Wimpy Kid, which is really wonderful. And, I'm just so happy. And, you know, thank you for everything that you do in educating our children on the North Shore. I just love it.
Okay.
And I'll wait for somebody else to make a call and add to the conversation.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. So in this show, I'll be announcing a number of different things coming up. But one that I wanted to talk to you about a little bit, Colleen, is next Tuesday on the 21st from 2:30 to 5:30 at the Kauai General Plan Update. That is in the county buildings right there where the Planning Commission meets. Their emphasis next week is on housing and social justice. And, Marshall, maybe you can pull that up in a time so we can give an email address out. But housing is such a very, very big challenge on this island, and there are so many things that compete with the ability for people to be able to have housing. And when I ran into Colleen, you know, she had so many good questions. I thought, oh, my gosh, you know what, can you please ask this on air? Because it, I thought, really demonstrated what many people have as questions. Some of it I know. Some of it, you know, I really want to invite callers to speak on. And I actually did do a little bit of research calls to some of my friends who are developers. I wanted them to call in, but they're meeting or something. But when you were thinking about housing, what comes to your mind first?
Well, I was at the post office at Hanalei this morning with Felicia, and she engaged me in a conversation. She asked me, what do I think about housing on Kauai? And I said, oh, gosh, I have so much to ask you about. Do you want to really know what I think? And she said, yes, I do, but why don't you come on the station, and you can provide a good sounding board, and people can become engaged and also call in. One of my questions I had was, it seems to me that Well, when I first moved here 10 years ago, and I worked at the post office in Lihue, there would be a lot of guys that were contract workers that would help to unload the planes on the runway, bring them to the post office. And all these young men had at least three jobs just to make their rent, to be able to house their families and feed them and support them. And most of them lived with their parents in their garages. And I was just wondering, having moved over here from Oahu 10 years ago, there were a lot of programs for low and middle income people. And this is not to put them in their own little area, but it would be whenever there's a development, and I believe it was a state of Hawaii law that a certain percentage of that housing development would be allotted to low and middle income. And I can't remember if it was 10%. So that would mean that you'd have 10% of, say, a subdivision or a development being made available to people who are first-time homeowners, who are low to middle income, but they live in the rest of the section of society. They're not segregated. And it seems like such a good start off. And I was wondering what would be preventing from that happening here on our island?
Okay, and I have some answers that have something to do with that. I see that we have a caller, so we can have them join the conversation in case they have knowledge on this particular topic, but we'll come back to that. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
So we're talking about the TDRs and homestays and
okay, yes.
Rentals,
well, temporary vacation rentals, homestays, Airbnb, those are things that can influence the crunch on housing because that consumes maybe some of the available space. Do you have thoughts on that?
Well, I think it consumes a substantial amount of the available space. You know, while we do have a permitting system in place, there's a real problem with the unpermitted TVRs and the homestays that are, you know, not exactly a homestay when it's a separate entrance and it's essentially just a second dwelling on the property. You know, there's a housing shortage already. You know, people struggle to find places to live. And by, you know, removing available units from the market, it does artificially inflate prices beyond, you know, the pretty absurd ones that we already deal with.
So are you opposed to the temporary vacation rentals or supportive of it or kind of in a neutral position?
I wouldn't say I'm 100% opposed to it. I think that there's a room for it. I think that, you know, there's areas in, you know, on the North Shore and South Shore where they're allowed, and those are fine. But when people, you know, kind of move outside the law, you know, in pursuit of money, it, you know, damages the community around them and it puts a buck in their pocket. But I don't necessarily know that that's a good way to behave if it's a good way to work or to live within your community.
So can you describe to me how it impacts the neighbors?
A really simple thing is that it just, people don't have places to live. You know, I think that most of us have known people or been there ourselves. I know I have when it's, you know, you're struggling to either afford where you live or, you know, the place where you live isn't available anymore and you're stuck looking for somewhere else. And it's frustrating to know that there are empty, you know, empty homes, you know, empty apartments waiting out there, but they're not available because somebody can rent it out for, you know, $200 a night when fair market value might be closer to $2,000 a month.
So how do you feel when the argument is made the only way somebody can afford to have a home is if they are basically turning it into a home-based business and renting out a piece of it so they have any hope of paying that mortgage?
Well, yeah, I hear that a lot, and I'm sure in some cases it's true. I suspect it's a very good talking point, so I think that those cases are overstated. You know, if you go on one of the rental websites like Airbnb, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, staying in somebody's home. They're standalone apartments. They're usually pretty nice. They're, you know, basically hotel rooms that people are operating illegally. That's not really the same as somebody who's having a hard time making ends meet. And then that argument is kind of disingenuous because it's like, okay, well, you're having a hard time making ends meet, you know, paying your own bills. so you're going to take an action which then makes it harder for the people around you who are stuck working, you know, low-paying jobs, working two jobs, barely making ends meet, and it's because this artificial, you know, inflation of rental prices.
Yes,
this is Colleen. You know, I'm really opinionated about that subject because I feel that our county or our island has been using that as an argument for inavailability of rentals for a long time. And I believe that we should look at the real issue, and that's providing new housing that people can afford. And I believe our government would be able to assist in that. And I also think that in regards to the vacation rentals, I think that if they were, maybe if the business was made more user-friendly, then we could collect the taxes from these people who are doing business, and it would feed into our county, rather than saying, oh, that you have a room that could be available to a renter. Why don't we tax these people for the income they're making by making it legal? And then our county will have more money to provide housing that would be affordable for your average person that lives on Kauai.
I mean, I could make that argument with other stuff, though. I mean, why don't we legalize the sale of drugs so people can pay taxes and put that money into
drugs are not legal. Illegal drugs are not legal.
I know it's not legal, but renting your home without a permit also isn't illegal.
So my suggestion would be, instead of using that as a reason for why there is no rentals, why don't we make that legal by giving them permits to do that business, and then the county can collect a lot of taxes on that.
Well,
you're talking about 4% excise and 10% on transient tax?
The transient tax, though, really goes to the state.
Oh, that's true.
So it goes to the state, and then the general excise tax also goes to the state.
But
so
we do get a percentage of that, our county.
Well, we get a piece of the transit accommodation tax. With this particular caller, I want to ask you a little bit about Airbnb, because I'm going to come back to your point, because that was kind of what you'd brought up before.
Mm-hmm.
Airbnbs, like, I don't know much about it at all, but I did look some up, and I even saw a person who had 4 tents with picnic tables in their backyard.
Oh, they said they removed all of those recently.
Oh, do you know who they are?
That supposedly Airbnb removed those recently.
Okay, well, I saw it.
But yeah, their Airbnb stance is that they can't be responsible for, you know, who is not legal. You know, they trust that you are. But that's pretty blatantly untrue, because, you know, really recently Manhattan Beach in California, they made short-term rentals, I believe it's less than 60 days, totally illegal within the city limits, no exceptions, no special use permits. And if you check, there's a lot of them. The numbers have not gone down in Manhattan Beach. And then a similar thing would be, and I just know this because the World Surf League recently partnered with Airbnb for a little spinoff called Swell Dwellings. On Maui, in the area from Paia to Haikou, there's 88 permitted homes, and there's 250-something listings.
So, okay, so let me ask this. Like, when something is illegal, do they run a risk of somebody, like, renting and staying?
I mean, there's a lot of risk. You can be fined. I believe it's up to $10,000 a day. And then, you know, the thing is with, you know, operating outside of law like that is you lose some of the protections that you may have. And you know, one thing is that, you can't make people pay you. You know, if somebody were to, you know, do a chargeback on their credit card or talk you into only taking a partial deposit and then stiff you at the end, I mean, what can you do? You can take them to small claims court and you can admit that, yes, while operating my illegal rental, these people didn't pay. And they could say, well, we didn't pay you because we didn't know it was legal. You don't have a lot of recourse. You're not going to be able to recover much money anyway. And you potentially look at huge fines. You know, then there's also, you know, if somebody were to stay and just refuse to leave, you're going to have to enter the eviction process. There have been multiple cases of that on the mainland, of people coming in for 3-4 days and then just refusing to leave. And, you know, as a landlord, I'd be like, well, I'll throw all their stuff on the street, and they can call the cops on you. That's illegal.
Right.
They can change the locks.
You're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. It's Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Colleen Smith is in the studio with us right now, and we are talking about housing, social justice issues, and the caller is speaking about Airbnbs. or illegal vacation rentals. So what you're saying is people can come in like they're on vacation, move in, and then simply not leave. And it's a very, very difficult situation for the land owner, the homeowner, because they are breaking the law. So if they try and use the law to get rid of their illegal tenant, then they're exposing themselves. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you know, honestly, if I were staring homelessness in the face, I'd be pretty tempted to make a 3-day, you know, 2-3-day reservation and then just move in. You know, and you'll have at least 45 days after they serve the notice to vacate. And if you really, really want to push it, you can force it all the way to eviction proceedings, although that's, I'm assuming, would be pretty uncomfortable.
So that's kind of an interesting twist. I don't mean to be, you can hear the smile in my voice. Okay. Colleen has something?
What would happen in the case if someone checked into a resort hotel and did the same thing?
Something totally different, because it's legal.
Oh, it's
you
legal.
Couldn't do that, you know, like, because when you're at a hotel, you have a credit card on there and everything is legal. They can use the law. But
right.
When somebody is illegally renting a room in their house and then they say, oh, well, this was only a 3-day rental at this amount, then you could say, well, kick me out.
Just a little side note. I'm familiar with Airbnb because I have friends that use it. And what happens is Airbnb collects through that guest credit card the deposit and the fee for the stay, and when the person checks out, Airbnb is responsible for refunding the deposit and also for returning that deposit to the renter and depositing the fee for the night stay into the host account. So I don't know. From what I hear, they handle their business pretty tightly, and they also have a number for security problems. I don't know what they do. I've never heard of any kind of bad situation that would happen, but I know that Airbnb has a number for that very reason, in case there's any kind of, you know, security or, I don't know, any situation where you would feel that your safety was, you know, in danger.
And I know that they say that, and it's great. And, you know, what you really are is you're taking the word of a company that profits from facilitating illegal activity. You know, that's their deal is they help people commit crimes.
Now, I don't know why you, I think you're assuming that. I don't know how you can say that's true, because the people that I know are permitted to do business. It's not an illegal activity. It's a legal permitted activity that they're doing. So, I think you're pointing out a worst case scenario, and there are worst case scenarios in everything.
So you guys are both bringing up good points. That's interesting. Caller, I know I have another caller holding. Do you want to listen and maybe if you call back in a while so
okay.
I can take care of the other caller? But you brought up a really interesting point. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Aloha. You're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. I just had a couple of things, and I have to say that I don't have the absolute specifics on them that but maybe your guest knows. In terms of affordable housing being put into developments, my understanding was that a recent affordable housing, which was down near Coconut Marketplace in Kapa'a, it had affordable housing in it, but at the end of a specified period of time, which I had heard was 5 years, and I've also heard 10 years, but at the end of that time, those people were expected to purchase that home at the going rate, getting a conventional mortgage. And so it basically is providing housing for a short period of time, because if they could have qualified for a conventional mortgage, they would have done that in the first place.
I am unfamiliar with that particular example. That doesn't sound familiar to me.
I'll get it out for you, because it really did happen.
So what happened?
You're very good on facts.
What happened, I believe, with the properties across from Kojima's, and I could take a correction on this, but that property, and then there's another one in Lihue that they built something to go into the affordable market for 10 years. And so there was a specified short time, and then those weren't owned. Those were rentals. So it might be that you're speaking of one of those.
I think they were actually rental with intent to purchase. You know, the kind of rental, the one that's different?
Yes.
You rent to buy.
Yeah.
And
lease to own.
But then the second one was something. I was on the Waipuli or the Wailua to Anahola County Development Planning bus trip that we took around to see
recently.
Where development's planned and everything. And somebody who was there with Kipukai, Ke Aloha, Kipukai, mentioned that the homes down there in the Department of Hawaiian Homelands, that since DHHL has stopped giving subsidized mortgages, she quoted to me that there's a 40% vacancy rate in there because people cannot qualify for a regular mortgage.
I can't speak meaningfully to that. I try and follow what happens with the DHHL lands and Kipukai Kualii. That might be a good thing to bring him in and talk about. You know, so much of those lands have not been placed in homes for infrastructure costs and many other things.
I think the point that I'm trying to make is even if you build, quote-unquote, affordable housing, if it requires that you get a conventional mortgage and able to own that house, then it's really not serving its purpose, because were these people able to get a conventional mortgage in the first place, they wouldn't have to be going into affordable housing.
Well, with the county, they do have their loan program, and they've done very, very good jobs with these first-time home buyer programs, and people would call county housing to call and talk about that and how they could get signed up. They train people to be buyer ready. We have had the housing people in here, and speaking of that, it's a complex topic that I don't feel that I can give solid enough.
I think it might be something worth discussing a little bit later, so I'm going to hang up, and I have to go because my person's here.
Okay, all right, and we'll discuss that a little bit later. Okay, aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hey, how's it, Felicia?
Hi, Matt.
Yeah, so what she was talking about was the condos next to Kintaro's, and she's absolutely right. It was a very bad deal done at the recession. Right around that.
Yeah.
And it's coming up.
Did I say Kojima's? I meant Kintaro's. Kintaro's right there, yes. Those, and there's others right there in Lihue that were built at the same time.
41. There's 82 units in there, and I think 41 of them were affordable. And they wanted to. It was on the docket to buy back at the going rate, but I don't think they did it. But yeah, she was correct on that. That was to me a very bad deal. We didn't get our money's worth for that, because the zone change that we traded for that was way more profitable for what we got in return. And I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you, Matt Bernarby, man who's running for county council. That sounds correct.
Thank you so much. Aloha. Bye.
Okay, thank you. Do we have another call?
No, sorry, Felicia, we do not.
Okay, all right.
We did.
Okay.
But now we don't.
Can I share something,
sure.
Felicia? This is Colleen. I just want to share my experience with real estate. When I was 22 years old, there was a organization. It was a state organization called the Hawaii Housing Authority, and they made available to first-time home buyers. At that time, a condo would cost about $55,000 in 1975, and I was able to buy a two-bedroom condo for $19,500, which is unbelievable.
Do you mind saying what year that was?
This was in 1975, and the going rate for a condo was $55,000.
Okay.
So they had certain restrictions, and the restriction was that you would buy it for this price, and you were committed to live there for 10 years. You were not allowed to rent it. So there was no speculation buying, and if you were to move out before the 10 years, you would have to sell it back to the state for what you bought it for. So I lived there for 14 years, and when I sold it for $125,000, and I was able to use that down payment to buy a house. And I was just wondering, what's preventing us from having that sort of program?
Well, they do have that sort of program. I know that the affordable housing unit across the street from me in Kilauea, It's called the Titcomb Subdivision, and that was really a workforce housing development that Princeville was required to do, and it has that same program. And so now they've been living in there for more than 10 years. People had a really good interest rate. Typically, they put $800 down, or they could put, I think, up to like $4,000 down. Then it was $800 a month. It was a good deal, and what you're speaking of happened for them, too, that once they hit that 10-year window, many of them sold it at market rate. So then they're able to put themselves in the main market. But mm-hmm. what that does is it takes that house out of the pool for helping mm-hmm. people. So I know that there's an intention to try and not do that anymore, that people can have it, but it's going to either stay in the affordable housing pool and not ever go up to market rate, or mm-hmm. Maybe to have it be a longer time, or maybe 1.5. There's all different kinds of permutations that can go into that. You had asked some questions earlier, and I want to do my best to answer it. And again, Akamai listener who knows better, they could call in. You had asked the question of why can't they just build more affordable housing? And one of the challenges in that is the incredible cost of infrastructure that goes in. I believe that it is 15% to 20% has to be affordable when a development opens up, but it becomes, well, what is affordable, right? What is affordable? Like affordable rental units are $1,000 for a one-bedroom or $1,200 for a one-bedroom, and that's hardly affordable for a lot of people, and that's a rental. But when you're making that purchase, our infrastructure costs are so profound. Like our water meter costs have gone up now from $4,000 to like $14,000 and some change. So that's just for the water. When you put in electric or the road improvements, before it went up to $14,000 a few years back, just to improve something on a cul-de-sac, the infrastructure cost for the developer is over $100,000. If they have something like R4 or R6, which mm-hmm. means 6 per acre or 4 per acre. So those costs are there. So when they have some things that are supposed to be at market rate and then some things that are on the affordable rate, it really forces their market rate properties up very high. That's why you get these $1.5 million, you know, you get these really incredibly expensive mm-hmm. properties, because somehow it has to subsidize the other end. And so it continues to be very expensive. And if we talk about impacts with the sewers or with roads, it's another piece. We have a couple callers that just called in, so I'll come back to that in a little bit. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hey, this is Susan Allen, and I wanted to say something about county housing.
Okay.
I bought a home from county housing over 10 years ago, and I've got to be honest with you, I was never, ever able to pay my mortgage on time. As most of you guys know, maybe you don't, but I own Savage Shrimp. I've owned Savage Shrimp for about 15 years, and I don't pay myself. I don't give myself a paycheck.
I'm sorry.
Weekly. And so I never was able to make my mortgage at the first of the month. But anyway, the county last year decided to foreclose upon me for a sum of $3,500 that they said was penalties and interest that I owed throughout the years. Mm. And I said, well, I didn't owe that much money to them. And once it was audited, I owed them $600 and they wouldn't take it. And I said, well, I don't want to walk away from my home that I put over $120,000 into, and they wouldn't take the $600. I had to file for Chapter 13 in order to save my house. How's that?
I think that's very unfortunate, and what that sounds to me like is what happens to many, many people, whether it is county housing or otherwise. I think that what happens when there are bank charges and penalties. That's, in fact, where banks make sometimes more of their money than they make on interest. And there is a whole array of payday loans and all kinds of ways that people who are struggling, the banks actually make a lot of money
but
on them.
The county is not a bank. My mortgage is never reported to a credit bureau. They use federal funds to finance this loan.
So that's what
I don't understand.
I'll have to learn more about that. I thought the county was sort of guaranteeing the loan, that they're basically in there as somebody who is guaranteeing the loan, but that's a subtlety to which I don't have complete...
$600, think about it, Felicia. They wouldn't take $600. I started to call you about this several times in the last year, but I was so freaked out about it.
So you're saying $600 is what you owed, and of that $3,500, that most of the $3,500, that $2,900 of it is penalties and interest.
I was appraised. I knew I owed them $3,500 several years ago, and every month, instead of making my $800 mortgage payment, I paid them like $1,500 or $1,000 or $1,200.
Okay.
To get caught up on that $3,500. But they said, they insisted I still owed them the $3,500. Oh. But then what the bottom line was I really only owed them $600 when it was finally audited, and they wouldn't take the $600.
Do you have a paper trail of all the payments that you made?
It's all said and done. I had to file Chapter 13 because they literally wanted me out of my home. They were rabid for me to get out of my home.
And what location is your house in? What region?
It's Salt Pond.
Salt Pond. Well, I'm glad that you shared that, and that's really unfortunate, especially if the audit said 600.
Right. Even the judge didn't do anything about it that day. He just said, too bad. I had nobody on my side. I went to Mel Raposo, and I went to Joanne Mukimura to please, please help me. Can somebody please help me with this? There's got to be somebody because I just turned 65. Did I want to lose all my credit? Well, I did.
So I think that I'm going to have to talk to you about this offline to see if
right.
I can help you somehow. It's probably a little detailed to be talking to all of Kauai about.
But I just wanted to tell you, listen, I think the county housing program is great. I really, really do. They helped me tremendously. I'm so stoked to have a home. But I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. I had a really bad year last year trying to keep my home.
Thank you for sharing your story. And then I think, are we Facebook friends? Can you contact me that way?
I will.
Okay.
I will. Thank you, Felicia.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm back.
Okay.
Real quick, I just wanted to address what your guest was talking about with her friends having permits, and that's really where I think that there's where she's misunderstanding me. The people who are already permitted, they're not doing anything wrong, and the amount of permitted TVRs that there are, I think are reasonable. I think that they're okay. But if you go on Airbnb, you can see that there is a vastly larger amount of rentals than are actually permitted. And Airbnb does, because I took my little time off here to check their website, they do say that they will help you in the case that your tenant refuses to leave. They also stress that it's depending on your local laws. So the thing is, Airbnb's assistance doesn't trump the regulations that the state or the county says you have to follow.
Airbnb is kind of like Craigslist or something, right? It's a platform. I haven't actually ever used it. It's a platform where people can just go in and sign something up on there. Is that correct?
Uber. Your home for rent. The difference between them and Craigslist is that Craigslist makes no money off of the situation. They just provide a place for people to list it, and that gives them some deniability. Whereas Airbnb takes a percentage from each person who rents. So they're actually profiting from something that is illegal. And again, it's, you know, it gets blurry as far as who is legal and
right.
Who is not.
Right. So some might be legal and some might not be legal, if I'm hearing correctly. So some, it can profit from something that's illegal, not necessarily. Like maybe some communities, it's totally fine.
Well, I mean, there's example of Manhattan Beach where not a single rental is legal. There's example of Oahu where there's 177 legal short-term rentals outside of Waikiki, and there are thousands listed on the North Shore down to Lake Laie.
Okay, that's a good example.
So for them to say, oh, well, we can't tell, and it's like, well, but that's the thing. It's just by looking at the numbers, it's very clear that in certain areas, the majority of your listings are not following the local regulations. And if a guest decides to, you know, not leave or damage the house, then, you know, the homeowner has to decide, it's like, all right, well, you know, I can call the cops and I can take them to court. And in the course of that, I'm going to be admitting, you know, what I've been doing. And I know in the case of Kauai, you can get fined $10,000 a day. So it's like, okay, well, you know, that's really a cost-benefit analysis right there. It's like I might be able to recoup some of my losses, but I open myself up to, you know, colossal fines.
So when we're looking at the larger picture of housing and social justice, this is an interesting little rabbit hole to go down of what is with Airbnb. And I think sometimes those are life rafts that people put out for themselves to be able to find a way to fund things. But where I would think it impacts the neighborhood, aside from maybe they wouldn't ever rent that out long term, but where it does impact it is in the case that I saw the example with the tents. You know, you're going to have four rental cars outside your house, maybe. You know, there's impacts that way too, and how it might crowd a neighborhood. Do you see a solution for creating more housing relative to this? Because that was what we were talking about.
Yeah, I think the solution is to start enforcing our laws and fining people heavily. And I think that the people who, you know, are using rentals as investment properties, I think that we either fine them to where it's not a, you know, they can't afford to have it anymore. They have to sell it. You know, that'll open up more places. That'll open up, or they switch over to long-term rentals. That'll open up more homes. It'll lower the price of housing. And, you know, it's great to say that, oh, we'll do, you know, government housing. And government housing programs are phenomenal and are excellent. But
I have ideas
on a scale to help everybody. And so, if you're talking about helping people buy homes, it's like, what about people who make $10 an hour?
So
people who work 30 hours, you know, two 30-hour a week jobs and make $10 an hour and are barely getting by as it is, they're not going to be able to buy homes. They still need a place to live.
So here's Councilmember Ross Kagawa has raised that same point. And this is a thought that I have. Like in some places, maybe in Kilauea or, you know, in the uplands or something, what you're saying might be true. In a place like Hanalei, you're basically living in commercial space. I used to live down there. It's like buying or renting commercial space for what the cost of it can be. But what happens when the TVRs close, the vacation rentals get shut down in a place like that now, it rarely does it go back into long-term living. It mostly then goes, you know, the billionaires are pushing out the millionaires. That's what I see along Veke Road in Hanalei is as these houses come out of temporary vacation rentals, where they provide a certain amount of jobs for the community. The people who buy it might buy it for $2 million sight unseen or more, and I know real stories of this, and I actually like the owners. But then, and it just totally taken out of the rental pool, but it is not gone back into long-term housing.
Well, I mean, and that may be the case sometimes. You know, the tourism industry jobs, you know, they're not good jobs. They're slave jobs, and cleaning up after people for menial wages, you know, in your own home. I don't really see a huge loss there. You know, it's like, sure, yeah, you know, there'll be less crappy jobs, you know, cleaning up people, you know, washing people's sheets after they leave, but there's also going to be affordable apartments. You know, you won't be able to make, you know, theoretically $6,000 a month off of a house that should be going for, you know, say $1,700.
Either that or we could be, you used the, I think you said Pacific Palisades, it can be that this becomes a high-end suburb of L.A.
Well, it was actually Manhattan Beach, and it's always been a high-end suburb of L.A., and I'd say that Hanalei is already a high-end suburb of Kauai.
Yeah, maybe California. you know. But so thank you for those points, and I'm glad that we've got a lot of calls stacking up, because I like it when the show is bringing in different people's perspectives. So I appreciate what you're sharing, and then I need to let another person in.
Thank you for having me on. I was really happy I could talk about it. Have a good day.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Is that me?
It is you.
Okay. To get to the other guy's conversation about, you know, like you were saying, Felicia, Hanalei, and even Haena, the average person isn't going to be able to afford those homes as a rental if they were no longer vacation rentals. And, you know, those jobs for those cleaners, they're really good money, I must say. I work for a homestay, and I won't say where it is. It is legal. And I get paid $30 an hour to clean. And it's a beautiful place to clean. It's a beautiful place to be. And she also has, like, a landscaper and window washers and someone that comes and cleans once every couple weeks, does a thorough clean. I clean up, like, do sheets and bedding and fluff towels and all that kind of stuff. I make the beds every single day for the people. And anyway, I make really good money working for, and she cooks for the people. Every single morning they get a fresh meal, a beautiful home-cooked breakfast. So some of these jobs are really good jobs, and I know that the housekeepers in Honolulu are getting at least $30 an hour. With that being said, there really isn't enough housing, and I know that housing, the low-income apartments supposedly in Princeville, a friend of mine tried to make an appointment. Nobody's ever called her back. When she went up there, nobody was around to talk to, and it seems like they're still somewhat vacant. And then it looked like there was, like, visitors living in or walking around one of them, you know, like they had just parked their car, and I saw them going to a unit, and it didn't seem like it was for people that lived here.
Well,
so do you know much about that?
Well, I actually know a decent amount about the Kolopua apartments because we, you know, as a show, kind of were pretty persistent at wanting to see that that went to housing for people who lived in this community.
I remember that conversation.
So I did focus on that quite a bit, and I am I have friends in there, so I'm there, and, you know, people might have family that visit from the mainland, so that might look like tourists. Marshall, kind of aware of that area too. Do you have any comments on that? Seems like it's pretty full to me.
It seems like it's full now.
I think it's full.
Okay, because when I go by, I just don't see that many cars, and it just doesn't seem, you know, like. But anyway, I had people like months and months and months ago that I told, you know, friends that I told, oh, you should go apply there. And they never heard back from the guy. It was really hard to get an application. And I remember he came to our K&A meeting before.
Yes.
And, you
Mateo.
Know, I remember talking with him. But, you know, it's true. There isn't that many affordable places. I have a rental on my property that's a long-term rental. And, you know, I'm going to have to raise the rent because everything's gone up since the person moved in there a few years ago, water, electricity, gas. And, gosh, you know, I see that when I look on Craigslist at what people are charging for rentals, it's gone up a lot. For like a two-bedroom place, it's like $1,900 or more. And, but when it comes to, like, you know, there was a couple people really fighting the vacation rentals. I don't want to name any names. But, gosh, some of those places, like I said, the average person wouldn't be able to afford. And that's out in Haena, right on the beach, you know. And it's not really fair that the real estate agent tells the people, oh, you can rent it out as a vacation rental when you're not here, and that will help pay for your very expensive property, you know, help pay your mortgage. And, gosh, I mean, you know, that's where things kind of, I think, went wrong, was in the real estate end of it.
It's a challenge. Yeah. So thank you. Thank you for calling in.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Marshall, and Colleen Smith is in here helping us as we are discussing the big community issue of housing. And housing and social justice is the topic that will be up at the next Kauai Plan Update So if people have an interest in this, we'll be telling you how you can get a hold of the planning department and share your ideas either through email or to go next Tuesday, 2:30 to 5:30.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Copper Man.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HARRYCONTI.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
Attention recyclers, beginning June 1st, Kauai residents and businesses can recycle their electronic waste free of charge 6 days a week. E-waste will be accepted at the Puhi Metals Recycling Center Monday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Puhi Metals is located at 3951 Puhi Road, about a mile from the intersection of Kaumualii Highway. Acceptable e-waste includes computers and accessories, televisions, printers, office equipment, audio and video equipment, and handheld devices. All brands of e-waste will be accepted free of charge with no quantity limits. Services are provided by Resource Recovery Solutions, and e-waste is shipped for recycling to IMS Electronics Recycling in Washington. For more information, call the County Recycling Office at 241-4841, 241-4841, or visit our website at kauai.gov/e-waste, kauai.gov/e-waste. Help keep our garden aisle green. Recycle your e-waste.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. I went there last to the e-waste last Friday and dropped off what I'd been kind of amassing for 2 years. They were super friendly, super nice, helped unload my car. I like that. So when you go down that road that's by the Puhi Industrial Park, I had to turn around a few times because I didn't realize it was as far down as it is. It's almost to where it's kind of almost like an old style road. So you go all the way down and it's on the right. And so I was happy to be there.
Okay.
So we were talking about housing, and then I had been attempting to answer your bigger question about why can't they just build more things? So we have had different developers in here. There's been a number of developers who have wanted to put in housing areas, definitely in Kealia, there was a whole big effort, and he had 114 affordable houses that I thought looked really, really nice. He had kind of a beautiful idea of how to do that. That was pretty fiercely fought. There was another one that is still sort of waiting in the wings back there a little bit up near Kilauea Middle School.
I'm wondering, what's the argument when you say it was fought? Who's fighting it? Who's trying to prevent that?
Many, many people, like most everybody. You know, other than the people who would be moving into it, they typically don't want it, I will say, for a handful of reasons. One big, big, big reason is infrastructure. The roads. The roads are all bottlenecked up. And when they're putting in new hotels and all these things, you know, it can really be a very big traffic jam there in along the east area.
And I was sharing with you today, I always get this vision whenever we drive over the Wailua Bridge as we're going into Lihue on your right side, right at the foot of the Sleeping Giant's Head. There's this beautiful valley, and I can envision a little subdivision there where it would be for middle income, or, you know, not for wealthy people. It would serve the people who are working and need housing. And then if you could allot 15 to 20% for affordable housing, low income, and give them that 10-year buyback option, I could see, like, you could put a little mall there. If there was construction there, you'd provide jobs for people who live on this island. Maybe they could make an agreement with the contractor that comes from the developer from Oahu, that a certain percentage of those people have to be people that live on Hawaii, Kauai, that are being employed, you know.
Land costs are really high. Bringing in the water is high.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we're learning, like in that would be part of the Puna Aquifer, there is a new development going on between Hanamaulu and the old Kuhio Highway area over to the bridge. We're seeing a big parcel right now sort of behind Walmart is under construction in that area, so I'm sure that there will be some of that. Water, you'd be surprised. There's less water availability than you would think. We're learning that this is like a big piece of pumice rather than having a big lens like Oahu did. We're learning that the geologic structure of Kauai is different than Oahu, that there has been, you know, the Kauai leaks in a way that Oahu doesn't. So part of it is the water infrastructure. Part of it's the land costs. You know, there's so much more than just building the houses and then buying that land. It sounds good. It's not so easy. So that's one of the reasons why on the cost. And then I know I got a caller holding. I'm going to bring that caller on in just a second. Sometimes the big humbug is people don't want this place to look like Oahu. So
we don't provide jobs for the people that need them. We don't provide housing, and all our kids end up moving to the mainland or Oahu, and we're going to end up with an island that is inhabited by laborers that work for hospitality in restaurants and hotels that don't get very much pay, and we're going to have the wealthy people that move here that already have money. And I see a lot of resentment between the local people and the people are moving here. We shouldn't feel resentful if you can afford to live here. We should provide housing for the people. And I think a solution would be to make it easier for vacation rental people to become legal so that they can pay those taxes and our county can make a lot of money on that. I really believe it.
The taxes don't go to the county.
Yeah, but we get a percentage of it, right?
We do. It's capped. It's capped. We get $14 million or something like that. It's capped, but it's capped. But there's more money to kick back to us. There are different ways that they earn money. When you saw me have a half smile, it's because something that I say that I get sometimes pushback for saying is I will say that the North Shore is like the canary in the coal mine of what is going to happen for the entire island, that what you see up here is it's becoming the rich and those who wash their cars.
Mm-hmm.
And having had a retail store for a long time at one point here, I used to be able to source staff. Our employment family lived in the region. Now, you know, it's like people are coming from Kapaa because they can't afford to live anywhere near where they work. And that's why those Kolapua apartments were built. It was intended to be workforce housing for the area. Challenge was is that, it's pretty expensive. It's like, you know, $1,100, maybe $1,400 a month, and people who work at $10 an hour can't really cough that up. We've got a caller holding. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, it's me.
Hi.
I've been a long-time North Shore resident, mostly Haena, Wainiha, for many years, since the early 80s. I've had to move several times because the owner has, you know, sold their house. I hear the way the realtors, and I'm so glad somebody brought up realtors, because I think they're the ones that are causing all this problem, and I've listened to them lie and lie. You know, there's no safe place from a tidal wave in Haena, but I've heard that, you know, if you're going to buy this place, this is the safest place in case there's a tidal wave. You know, I mean, there's no place, and that's in Haena. And these realtors, and I've served many of them food, and I know lots of them, but every time they turn over a house or flip a house, they make a whole lot of money. And guys like me who can't afford to buy a house out on the North Shore or anywhere on this island, and I've raised all my kids here, they've moved to the mainland because they don't want to work all week just to pay their rent for the month, you know, and get nowhere, you know. So they've moved to the mainland.
But anyway, I'm glad somebody brought up the realtor thing. I think it's a really horrible thing that's going on here. I've also cleaned a lot of vacation rentals, which, you know, I raised my kids doing so. But I've been displaced several times, not of my own doing, but just, you know, the realtors talk these people into doing whatever, you know, you can sell this house for this much money. And I'm watching this place go, yeah, like you said, from millionaires to billionaires, you know. And, yeah, housekeepers get a lot of money, but, you know, it's like the cost of living here is ridiculous. And, you know, trying to raise your kids, and then you can't find a place to live if you don't own something.
And one of the challenges that happened is, and it happened across the United States, is around 2000, they dropped the prime interest rate to 1%. And so, you know, they knew what they were doing. It was an intentional extraction of wealth, because what happened was that they did these low interest rates, but they were on adjustable rate mortgages, and many people who got them did not understand what that meant. And so people, it caused the price of housing to skyrocket. And some of that happened after 2001. So if you give them the absolute benefit of the doubt, if they're saying, okay, we want to stimulate the economy. 2001 is when the skyscrapers in New York City, the World Trade Centers, collapsed. And so that created an economic downturn in the country. So they said, don't worry about it. Go shopping and go building and things like that. So when they had this low prime interest rate and people bought houses they couldn't afford, they did not understand it. Most people don't understand compounded interest, and they don't understand how that just going up one percentage point can bring up maybe $200-$300 a month of what you're paying or more. And so we had this real estate bubble where we had this profound transfer of wealth. But what happened between 2001 and, say, 2008 is houses tripled in value, and people were getting home equity lines of credit and different ways that they were essentially treating the value of the house like an ATM, like a place to get money out, a money machine. And so people got lured into, without having the financial literacy to understand what they were doing. And so as people were spinning real estate, it brought that price up. So we have layers of what happened. So rather than it necessarily being realtors creating this problem, maybe everybody jumps in on the bandwagon when there's an opportunity. And I'll probably get in trouble for sharing this story, but if you look a decade earlier than that, when we had the hurricane, we had several things happen at once. It used to be this place was alternative agriculture. Even the West Side, all kinds of places, people were growing and selling pot. And people were able to live a very simple life, and we didn't have a lot of building codes that made things so extraordinary. And Green Harvest came in, shot that industry. On this side of the island, on the North Shore, we had a very vibrant boating industry. And so many, many people had jobs they loved. They made a good wage. They owned the houses. Maybe there was two families that lived in it, or they had a rental. But, I mean, I took a tax map key, and you could look at all the houses that had people who lived in it. So when the boating industry shut down at the same time that the marijuana industry shut down, a lot of people who used to sell marijuana started selling real estate. You know, people had to change their product. And so we saw that particular crew became very good at selling real estate. And as these houses emptied out, because when the boating industry closed down, people went into despair. I mean, I feel like I could write a master's thesis in economics of what happened in shutting that down. But Hanalei went from being Anhaena, went from being a residential community to a motel. Mm-hmm. And then so they kind of figured out, hey, there's this vacation rental industry. And so that's almost all the houses that shifted at that time when boats were shut down, marijuana was shut down, it went from a residential community to a motel.
And then some of the vacation rentals out in Hyannis got so-called red tagged because they didn't have, I don't know, they still pay transient tax to the state, right? But they got shut down, and some of them didn't, you know, which should, because it's all conservation.
It's conservation,
land, so. From Maui all the way down.
Right. So they are breaking the rule on that. Another big piece.
But it's like the state has allowed them to break the law. But the state still takes their money. You know what I'm saying?
We have that complication. And then another complication that happened after the hurricane is that the building code went up substantially. So when you're talking about Hyena, it looks like a bunch of daddy long legs out there, people sometimes 16, 18 feet into the air.
Oh, unreal.
Elevators in there because they're too senior to be able to make it up to the top. You know, there's different things that are out there, and the building codes are so substantial.
Fly over the air and see what is legal and what is not legal, just like how Green Harvest is looking for patches of, which happened last week, by the way. I thought they were going to land in my yard. They were so low. They flew over an hour and a half over Hyena and Wainiha. I thought they were going to land in my yard in Wainiha.
I have a robust yard, and I have a lot of food in my yard, so they always, you know, they spend about 10 minutes above my house.
And one other thing I wanted to mention, this low-income housing, like the one that they put up next to the fire station up by Princeville.
Yeah, Kolopua.
I mean, there's a giant cell tower right in the back of it.
Yeah.
So everybody's getting,
EMFs.
Those radiation, whatever. So it's just like, okay, let's put the poor people mm-hmm. in here, which you can't even be poor to pay that rent. You know, a two-bedroom place is like $1,200.
Happy story on that, because I've done shows on EMF and cell towers, and I have some friends in that building, and I was promoting it on this show, and they have smart meters. I have gone in there with an EMF meter, and it's remarkably pretty good in inside. I'm so surprised, but
are you kidding, really?
Yeah, it is.
And then there's I don't know what it is, but it sounds like a generator going all night long. It's very loud, and it's in the building down the parking lot from it, and it goes all night long, and all their lights are very bright, so it's like, you know, you can turn all your lights off in your house. I mean, I used to go up there and babysit for my friend's kid, and it's like I wake up at 2 a.m. and I can hear this generator thing going, which never stops. Well, and the lights are so bright.
So thank you.
And then I'm looking up at the south cell tower, and I'm just like, I know all these single mothers and families, low income families, living up here, and it's like, you can just zap them with some tumors and.
Right. Well, I'm thankful they're not on the beach, and I'm thankful, like, I've put the EMF meter right next to the wall where the bedroom wall where it's against the panel, and it was remarkably not too bad. I have somebody who's been holding for a while, so
okay,
I appreciate
I'll
your call.
Okay, thanks so much for your show.
Okay, thank you. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. I'm calling to give further details about the Oceans for Peace event.
Okay.
Events, I should say.
So did you hear I announced some of it?
Yeah, I did at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Right. So the teach-in this Friday that is happening at 6 at the Kapa'a Library is going to have 3 speakers. One of them is Juan Wilson on the expansion of the U.S. military in Pacific, and Katie Muzak, who is going to be, has been for years doing the threats to the coral work, and now has some students that are helping her replant coral so that the bleach off doesn't continue decimating the coral
bed. Yeah, she's got a good coral garden project
there in Kapa'a. Exactly, mm-hmm. Beautiful. And then Kalasara, who has the Friday nights films about whales, she is going to be talking about the whale impact of RIMPAC on the whales and other animals in the sea. So it's our first teach-in. We haven't scheduled another one, but that's going to be this Friday at 6 p.m. at the library. the film series, which is Oceans for Peace and RIMPAC Impact. So it starts on the 23rd with the movie you correctly described is about the sonar and its effect on our ocean life, corals and as well as the mammals, the whales and the dolphins and the turtles and other water ocean. So that's at the Kaloa Neighborhood Center at 6 p.m. And there will be discussions following all of the movies, except Oceans. But I'll get to that. So first we have that on Thursday, the 23rd, and then on the 24th, that's the whale movie. And Kalasara will be there to talk about that. That's the usual last Friday of the month. Kalasara has her whale, Kahola Leo. Sunday the 26th, Princeville, you mentioned, is going to be having that same Sonic Sea at the Neighborhood Center there at 6. On the 1st of July, the film you described as Why We Fight at the Kaloa Neighborhood Center at 6:30. And then July the 9th, the next weekend, the Oceans film is a remake by Disney of a wonderful documentary that two French documentaries did of all the creatures who live in the oceans. So Disney got a hold of it and made it more kid-friendly, but also just in terms of time, probably. Just wonderful documentary photographs of all the creatures in the ocean. So that's July the 9th. It's a Saturday, and that's a film about oceans. We are scheduling at Salt Pond probably Friday or Saturday a postcard event. So we will be giving postcard with all of the ocean films because the next ocean film is going to be the 17th of July, Sunday, and that will be at 1 in the afternoon, and that's at the Kapaa Neighborhood Center.
Do you have a website where people could go to look at this?
Yes, we do.
Okay, what is that? And do you have an event page?
The website is Oceans for Peace.
With the number 4, not F-O-R,
correct,
but
correct.
Oceans, and then
Oceans,
the number 4.
Number 4, Peace.
.org?
I'm not
Marshall, can
quite
you look
sure.
it up? He'll look it up.
Yeah, sorry, I don't have that.
And Marshall, maybe you can post it on the KKCR Community Radio Facebook page.
Yeah, they do have a Facebook page.
That's oceansforpeace.org.
Great. So they are having a Facebook page, and they are going to be putting up a calendar and events. They haven't already done it. Kalasara is very on top of that. And we also have Rick Cooper, who's going to be part of that. And so, come to the teach-in, and we'll definitely be giving you updates as we go along. So I'm just calling in because I wanted to clarify some of the kind of open-endedness that was in the earlier announcement. We will be doing Oceans for the children's film on the North Shore. We're still working at where, whether at Kilauea or Hanalei or Princeville. Princeville Community Center is a possibility, but that's still in the works.
Okay, and maybe coming up on one of these shows, it would be good to come in and talk, and maybe we could put a few sound clips in from Sonic.
Yeah. Yeah,
that seems like a good choice. Okay, well, thank you so much.
You know, Felicia, I will write that down and send it on to Gordon Labetz, who's with the Surf Rider. He is the person that organizes us. So we've had two meetings, and I'm sure that we will continue to have, because it's all about RIMPAC for the duration that they're here, but also to the whole issue of our oceans. One of the interesting things that was stated last night was that whenever they put up these zones to protect endangered creatures, the military doesn't have to go by that.
Right. It does not prohibit the military from being in there at all.
Right.
Something, I'm just going to throw this out there, food for thought, you can write it down for Gordon, is I would like to see the recommendation be made through our senators and representatives to have, and I believe Brian Schatz is on the military subcommittee in the Congress there.
We were wondering about that.
I would like to make the recommendation that RIMPAC could really help work for world peace or defense, keep the world safe by maybe they could have the 2018 be focused on Fukushima or plastics in the ocean. I think
my sister said. What about the plastics?
So, like, I think that maybe that RIMPAC can be redirected. If we, I always find it's easier to come up with a positive solution than to fight something. So, I mean, we can still spend hundreds of millions of dollars on the event. So, we can still have all that funding go out, but let's either pick up the trash in the ocean or help clean up and somehow sequester what's going on in Fukushima. All of those are things that is of a safer world, and we could use 27 countries all coming together and sharing their best and brightest, and it would be a defensive action that helps
focus on right.
So we could maybe let's actually really ask for that. Maybe we could do that. And
maybe to put it in a form of a proposal and present it to your state
and I'm
federal representatives.
I'm serious about that.
That is a brilliant idea.
And because, I want to pull the Navy into it and Stu Burley. Stu Burley lives here. He's the one who came up with the RIMPAC idea. Okay, great. Let's have RIMPAC, but let's just change the objective.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
That's brilliant.
Definitely. Well, we do have a mission statement, and I don't know if I don't know if that's part of the promo that was given to you.
You can share that with me, and then I have a person who's been holding almost as long as you've been on the phone, so I want to get to them.
Our mission statement, our petition: we, the undersigned, demand that the U.S. Navy stop conducting the Rim of the Pacific exercises, RIMPAC, because the world's largest international maritime warfare exercise, held biannually in the Hawaiian seas. RIMPAC should be terminated because of the immense documented harm it does to the marine environment and life in our oceans. And that we are doing postcards with the kids to send to our state representatives, and then a group photo of all the art to send to every congressperson.
Okay, and then throwing my own thing in, should be redirected to, is that way you don't have to terminate it? Nobody has to lose the funding? You just redirect it? Because we could redirect it, and if we picked up the rubbish, that would actually help the marine life. Anyway, that's just my mana'o on that. But
right.
So,
no, that's a very helpful point.
Okay, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, Felicia. Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you so much for calling KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station.
Aloha. This is Robert from Kapa'a. I love the topic you guys are just covering with RIMPAC and the idea of, instead of trying to stop it, because, I mean, we all know the military is not going to stop, but if you can divert it or you can give them alternative.
Yeah,
solutions.
Redirection, you know, because it's meaningful. It'll make a big difference.
And the military would be so happy to have a positive
project.
Yeah.
They're actually good guys.
And they would like the public to see them in a positive way. And that would be a good compromise. It's brilliant, Felicia.
Thank you. So, Robert?
Well, that's my two cents on that. But I wonder, kind of add a lens to the topic of housing. I'm really into sustainable architecture. And when I go up and down these streets, I see wood. I see, you know, where do we get this wood from? This is imported. And where do we get the concrete from? It's probably imported. You know, it's unsustainable, and it's a drain on the economy and the environment. And there's so many other alternatives, and it just takes people with enough passion and discipline to be able to go to the planning and committee and to show that, look, you can use hempcrete, you can use aircrete. I don't know if your listeners have heard of, like, aircrete, but it's an incredible concept. Use a quarter of the concrete, and you mix it with, like, a foaming agent. It could be Bronner's soap. Yet what it does is it makes these concrete blocks that you can cut like wood, yet they're insect repellent. And the point being is we're working off an archaic system, which either way, if it's a $1 billion house or if it's sustainable housing, you're still using the same building materials. And I just love to see more people go in that direction, because I think it'd be more of an incentive for people to work on these projects if it was not so much of an import.
So can I make a suggestion on your idea?
Please.
I would suggest that you send your idea into the planning department, and if you go to plankauai.com, and the better that you're able to give them links or things like that to describe it, that's really strong. And the planning department, the planners are actually really young and all excited about, you know, innovative ideas. And that's an important one. And I know that hemp got passed to be a replacement crop. So when we're looking at economic development, if we are able to have some local industry that comes out of it, so it's not all shipped away, if it's something that gets grown and utilized here, you know, they're looking for a way to replace some of the agricultural fields that are coming out of use. And, you know, when in this larger conversation, when we're talking about vacation rentals, if we create another leg to stand on for the economy, that's really how you can move away from becoming, you know, the uber rich and those who wash their cars. In fact, most of the uber rich, they bring their whole entourage with them, and they're not even using the people around here to wash their cars. So it creates another venue. I usually try and say, how do we outcreate the problem rather than stop the effort? And so
I love that.
I recommend, if you have good ideas, to send them in soon, and then, next Tuesday at 2:30, it's really you go and you listen, but by being there and listen, you have a little bit of opportunity to share back, but it is not a public hearing. What Mike DeHelig has been doing, he's the planning director, is when there's a good turnout in there, the end of these meetings have breakout groups, and so they do a citizen breakout group, and so the planning director works with the citizens, and he does ask questions, the same questions that go to the community advisory committee, and he really is trolling for ideas. It's really a well-done thing. I want to give my shout-outs to the county for the openness that they're putting these meetings together in. I'm pleased with it.
Could you give a quick bullet point of the where and when to that?
It is May 21st, a week from today. I would go, except I'm on the air.
You mean June 21st?
Yes. Sorry. June 21st. It's Tuesday from 2:30 to 5 p.m., and it's in the Moikeha building, which is where the Planning Commission meets. Do you ever go to the county? Do you know where?
I do.
Yeah. So it's in that meeting there, and if you send them an email, and Marshall, can you look up their email for me? On plankauai.com.
Yes.
It is.
That is plankauai@kauai.gov.
plankauai@kauai.gov. And they really do have a good open mind and an open heart. Whether they can implement it or not is a different thing. In a minute, when we have a chance, I think we have another caller holding. Is that correct?
No, we don't, but I have a comment from a caller.
Okay, for Robert? Okay, so in a little bit, I'm going to share an idea that I have that I think is a good way of addressing the housing issue, too, that I think is more cost-effective. But so Robert, you're talking about building materials and changing building materials, and I think that that's an important piece.
Yeah, I'll close on this. But it's just whatever we do, we end up destroying more of the environment to begin with. And unless we're using albizia, which we're not, you know, it's just a very destructive practice that hopefully more people start questioning. And the more that people start to question a bad idea, the more that we can start come up with a good idea. Mm-hmm. And you said it perfectly. You know, you gave a Buckminster Fuller quote of, instead of trying to destroy the current system, build something better.
Yeah, outcreate it. And albizia, that breaks down really fast, so
yeah,
it's like worse than pine.
I mean, I don't want to touch a koa. I don't want to touch any hardwood, you know, in any unsustainable way for a house that may be around for 100 years. Max.
Well, we have hardwood forests growing here. We can also use, you know, bamboo that's well suited for it. We could use hemp. There's a lot of materials that can be sourced here.
True. But I love this forum. I love the RIMPAC discussion too. That was great. And I'll be at that film screening. I'm a filmmaker on island too. And, you know, just support people sharing the good word. So.
Can you give me your last name?
Brown, Robert Brown.
Robert Brown. Okay, Facebook friend me if you can. I'm Felicia Belongi Cowden on there. And then call it to my attention because I have some ideas for you.
Yeah, I'll share. I've been working on a hempcrete 3D printer for large architecture for about 2 years now. And, I've helped to do a demo and just to see if it's tangible. And I've seen it work in other cases, and you know, it does take jobs away in some cases. If you want to just say as bluntly as that, you know, you don't have 40 guys working 6 months on one house, but you know, at the same time, you know, they're having that mass of people and skilled carpenters that can go towards a lot of other good things like restoration. Other ways. So
there's plastic equipment too that can take a waste and turn it into really good building materials. Although I wouldn't really want to live in a plastic house because it might be toxic. But there are different ways that we can reutilize plastics. Marshall, you have something?
You have a working prototype of a large scale hempcrete, a 3D printer.
Well, without going into detail, I have some friends back in California that are working on one, and I was working with concrete, but I didn't like the idea of concrete, and I wanted to see what we could do with other resources, so I looked at hemp. Right now, hemp normally is kind of ground up into like almost it's very fibrous, and it's not good for printing, so we found a way to make almost a conveyor belt so that it presses and makes almost a 2 to 6 inch wide layer, almost like, you know, like a pastry factory. And it lays out layer by layer the hempcrete, and it made it much more pliable. But then we started working with aircrete, and, I advise the listeners to check that out. It's really cool. It's a simple technology. You can buy a kit for a few $100 and start making your own aircrete. And, the technology grows every day, and just finding a way to make everything work together is, I think, the gem of getting any idea off the ground. So, we've seen it work. We try to set it on fire and it won't burn. We back the truck up into it and it won't crack or bend or break. We've soaked it in water and it hasn't dissolved. So, I've seen it. And
termites?
That gives me hope.
And no termites, probably, or hate.
No. No termites, no problems.
I want to encourage you to really inspire the planning people because they're actually excited about stuff like that.
Good. I hope they are. And I'm trying to make a pre-vis, which means just a computer-generated simulation of what it looks like as it's working, you know, what it takes. Because the more people can see it and make it more tangible, the more they can go, oh, we're on board with that. So that's my job as a video and filmmakers and make those dreams real so that people can see them more clearly.
Well, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thank you for the platform. I'm continuing listening and hope other people call in with their ideas.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha, take care.
You have something you want to share, and then I want to share my idea.
Sure, but that is a great way to test a building material. Back a truck into it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. That was This is really great. Okay, what was your thing somebody wanted to share?
Lynn from Oceans for Peace. So two things. She wanted to emphasize that the website is oceans and then the numeral 4peace.org. And also wanted to mention that Tulsi Gabbard did write a letter to the Navy asking them to be more conscious of the environmental impacts of what they're doing. And so that we do have an ally in Congress.
And Tulsi and probably Brian could both be utilized for redirecting RIMPAC. Okay, I'm going to share my housing idea, which I have shared many times, but I am going to share it again because I'm hoping it populates into people's minds. When we set up an affordable housing place, it can be really 20 years between the time that it's first envisioned to when it's actually people are moving in. It takes a long time. There's a lot of costs in planning and design, and the whole process is really, really large. And what happens when developers build, they have to do a certain percentage that goes towards affordable housing. Now, they can build that affordable housing, like Alexander and Baldwin is putting a big place up in LA area. So that is one whole big neighborhood that is in alignment with what you're speaking of, Colleen. But another thing that can happen is that money can just go into basically an account for the county. And what I think, and especially when we have these dips in the market, you know, maybe you save it for a while, but we have dips and peaks, you know, peaks and valleys. And I was pushing for this heavy after the hurricane because everything was for sale. So if we were to be buying at the bottom of the market and the distressed properties, that actually helps the whole real estate market, but it populates affordable housing just dispersed into the community. So it isn't something that somebody fights or they don't want this development. Like what you're suggesting, Colleen, requires fresh development. You said, why don't people want it? People like the way the island is now. The infrastructure costs are really prohibitive. And then very often many of these places are displacing where people of native or indigenous bloodline feel like, wow, you know, we are displaced and displaced and displaced. So there is pushback from the Kanaka Maoli people also. That tends to be a big voice that happens. But if this money is taken and simply redirected in buying up the bottom of the market, that can have inventory that's anywhere, and you can do it in spot ways. And so you can decide, all right, there's this in this Moku, you know, each different region can get a certain amount of purchasing that is appropriate, rather than having to do an entire development and then never come back to that area for another 20 years. So I think that that's one thing that could happen. And another thing that I would really like to see looked at more is we have a lot of commercial space that is sitting vacant. Mm-hmm. And I was at the governor's luncheon, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, and I was sitting there with somebody from Habitat for Humanity as I'm in the Westin. And I'm thinking, yeah, we could get partners together like the Westin and Habitat for Humanity, because when you see hotels buying these places out and renovating it, over the years we've seen hotels get bought out on 20 cents on the dollar. And I think, okay, buy one of those hotels out on 20 cents on the dollar and refurbish it for even just semi-permanent housing. You know, the people that's not like a big, huge, perfect unit, but you can turn that into it. I've had people scoff at me over that, but why not have people be in a really nice location? I mean, that can happen. And when we have big warehouses in different commercial areas that are just vacant, it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. I think that we could do something, if there's the intention there, to go in with like Habitat for Humanity coupled with these companies that know how to make livable spaces and redirect it and make them decent. But, you know, it can be built in ways where it is a rental, a low-cost rental. But I think if you had things like directed, like cooperatives where there's childcare and there's different things like that, because it's on the bus routes, and it might be people say, oh, but the the commercial landowner, they don't want that. But I'm thinking these places have been sitting there empty for close to a decade, you know, and if you have it done nicely, it provides a clientele base for some of the other commercial areas. I just think that we really need to think outside of the box, because when we plan developments, even if, say, you could have that valley that you're looking at, that Ahupua'a, and you put all that in there, by the time the people move in, it's 5 years from now, maybe 10 years from now, and they need a home yesterday. Mm-hmm. And so I think that infill and utilizing like monies in that direction is one very reasonable way to do it. And when I saw that there was, like, you know, some millions of dollars placed by the governor, so I'm glad that there's a task force on housing, that there's a whole department now that's looking at housing. We have 25% of the state is housing insecure. Some of those monies maybe could be, instead of buying and building, that they just essentially go to a rent subsidy. Again, you are being able to put people into housing immediately. And yes, there's HUD, but HUD doesn't necessarily have enough money, or it can be something that can subsidize HUD. Because another challenge that we have is HUD has a housing standard. That's Housing and Urban Development. It has a standard that, you know, renters have to meet. And if something is up to that standard, well, then it's not at the price that HUD is willing to pay. Mm-hmm. That's very often the problem. And so if the county was able, or the state was able, to put in a little bit, you know, a $200 or $300 subsidization, and allow the people who live in there to pay $200 or $300. There's ways that we can do that. Other things I think that are important to be looking at is these HUD rules don't allow for a roommate. They don't allow for a number of elements that would actually cause housing to be possible. So I've been happy in the you know, the national election stuff, housing is coming up. I'm looking at John, Jazz with John. A great program is coming up at 6 o'clock. Please stay listening. He does great jazz music then. Marshall, you had looked at what some of the platforms are of the national people relative to housing and social justice.
I did. And I took a look at Donald Trump. I took a look at Hillary Clinton, at Bernie Sanders, at Jill Stein, and at Gary Johnson to see what they had to say about housing. Donald Trump says nothing. Gary Johnson says nothing. Hillary Clinton actually says nothing about housing.
Really? I mean, maybe she didn't write it there. I did see a talk where she was mentioning that that was a crisis.
Oh, I should qualify. This is their own, their official campaign website under the issues.
Oh, okay.
They list their specific policies on the issues.
Okay.
So listed on her website, she has nothing about housing. I'm sure she has.
Yeah, I've definitely heard her do a speech on it.
Bernie Sanders has quite a bit on housing. He has a multiple point plan, and Jill Stein does have it as part of her platform as well. Doesn't go quite into as much detail, but I could tell you the main points of Bernie's plan if you like.
Okay, do we have time? His probably like 5 minute plan there. Okay.
Yeah, well, expand affordable housing and promote home ownership and help underwater homeowners, prevent homelessness, and getting lead out of homes, addressing housing and environmental justice. That's how Bernie would approach it.
I love it how politicians always have this agenda, but I would like to know how. How do you plan to do that? How do you plan to do this specifically?
Well,
is that listed?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I said it's probably going to be a really long thing, because that's been a big part of his platform throughout the whole campaign.
I mean, if you pick one of those aspects, I could go more deeply into it, but Bernie particularly has a lot of information. Apparently, he's not only thought through it, but he's worked on it. Let's see. Senator Sanders is proud to have authored the original National Affordable Housing Trust Fund bill in the House of Representatives in 2001 that became law in 2008. It's the first new federal housing production program in almost three decades. So he's actually been in the thick of this for a long time and knows what he's talking about. Jill Stein, she has a five-point plan. It sounds like good ideas, but frankly does not sound like they're coming from someone who knows the issue from the inside out. And that's about where that stands. While we're on national politics, just real quick.
How did it go today in Washington, D.C.?
Hillary Clinton got 79% of the vote. It's not unexpected. And she and Bernie Sanders had a nice meeting today. Bernie also met with Senate Democrats at their weekly lunch. And talking about how the Democratic Party is going to move forward and what Bernie's role is going to be.
I hope it's president. Mm-hmm. I'm still on that page, but I know I'm in a minority on that.
I'm with you.
So I haven't given up yet, even if he has. I hope he hasn't, though. He says he hasn't. They're still counting California, so that's good. There was, you know, she won by 400,000 votes, and there was 2.4 million that weren't counted. So it's good to actually count them. It seems that there's quite a good number of states that have still yet uncounted ballots in a significant amount, like enough to make a difference. Mm-hmm. But we can tell that the establishment is trying to stop that piece. I know for me, one thing when I look at a national level on housing, I think it would be far cheaper to have what they call housing first than to put as many people with mental illness and, you know, just financial inability to manage than it is to put them in jail. Like right now, we put so many people in jail, and some of these people don't. It costs a whole lot to put a person in prison. It costs a whole lot less to simply house and feed them, you know. And I've actually, you know, talked to people before. They don't mind jail that much because they can't make it, you know. Mm-hmm. They can't make it. And so they at least have a warm place to sleep and they're fed. I mean, I don't think that that's most of them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's, you know, they get a little bit of time out when they're in there. And
it's a sad state of affairs, really.
Mm-hmm. It's a sad state of affairs, and I think that we would have less mental illness if people had solid housing.
You'd have to be able to address that mental illness, too, because a lot of times that's the cause for them being in there, and it's a cause for a lot of homeless people, too.
Well, and the idea being that if you get them in a housing situation where they're stabilized, then mm-hmm. you have some basis to start addressing mental illness, but try to do that when they're wandering around on the streets. No.
It's very difficult, mm-hmm. so the problems escalate. And mm-hmm. When I was in Oregon, we were looking over at a view, and it had the poor farm. And I remember, I don't know if John Gordon is old enough to remember that they used to have something called the poor farm. So he's nodding his head. My mom used to say, oh, I don't want us to get sent to the poor farm. And I never knew that there was a real thing called the poor farm. But they had poor farms. And so the difficult thing is that people with mental illness and maybe violence and poverty were all sent to the same place, but there were big poor farms. And where we're looking over one in Portland, it was a big compound, and they, you know, had to raise their own food and basically take care of themselves, but it was like a big community.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could go to the poor farm if you couldn't make it. So
that might be a positive move, it sounds like. But, I mean, if you said you'd grow your own food and basically your needs would be met.
Yeah. I mean, from...
It could be a community.
So put John on the... John, put your voice in there. Do you remember... do you remember the poor farms?
I remember hearing people talk about it. I didn't personally have any experience with it, but I think if...
Was that before your life, though? Did it happen when you...
Might have been early in my life, which was a long, long time ago. And the other thing is that It might be a good concept, but I think you want to change the name.
Yeah, you would want to change the name, but you know, it's like, I think people are trying to, when you see people trying to do cooperative communities,
find solutions,
they grow their own food. That's not a poor farm. So yeah, you would want to change the name, but like when I was looking over at this description of a poor farm, I was thinking, "Oh, you know, I got a lot of friends who want this, you know, this is what a lot of people are trying." So, you know, it's just live simply so others can simply live. We are just about done. Marshall just reminded me tonight, as soon as I leave this place, I'm going to go get on the plane and I'm going to go to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals tomorrow on Oahu to listen to the 3 cases for Oahu, Maui, and Kauai on the use of agriculture fields. Each one has been sued by the biotech companies for basically home rule issues, counties. They're saying, no, counties can't come up with their own jurisdictions. So I'm going to go listen to that. And there is also a very important water case for Maui dealing with the injection wells where they, you know, and we all poop, so it's kind of all of our fault somehow, but they, you know, they have to not make mistakes, so there's a contaminated water issue because of the injection well. So I'm going to be going to that tonight. So, Marshall, do you want to say aloha?
Aloha, everyone. Thank you, Felicia.
And John, thank you for coming in.
Yes, ma'am.
And we're going to hear from him in just a minute with the county council report and then Jazz with John. And Colleen Smith, how's it been?
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Thank you for providing this platform for me to ask you the questions, and you answered them. It was very helpful. Thank you.
Did you feel like I answered them?
Well,
some
yes,
of them.
But
I mean, a lot of them are unanswered.
I still feel like I'm kind of a cynical person. I usually want answers. I want, and I know you can't give me answers right away, but
you want
it would be my wish, yeah, that the nation and the state level and the county level would EMUA to address this, and it's not just for me. I do see that we want to address the homeless and, you know, poor people, but also the middle class that are working
right.
So hard.
That's right. That's right. The middle class actually takes it sometimes the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll give a shout out to your husband, Gordon, just
Thank
in case
you.
He's listening. He used to be at the Hanalei post office.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. And now we have the county council report, then Jazz with John. Thank you. This has been Kauai's Soapbox.
Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of June 13th. There will be a regular council meeting on Wednesday, June 15th, and the meeting will be in the council chambers in Lihue. Here are highlights in the agenda. The Director of Finance transmits for council information various financial reports. Council member Kuula'i transmits for council consideration a proposed charter amendment resolution establishing a county roads resurfacing reconstruction backlog fund, which would be funded with $1 million in real property tax revenues and $1 million of transient accommodations tax revenues each year. And this is resolution number 2016-48. The Acting County Engineer requests council approval to apply for remaining available federal grant funds in the amount of $714,007 on a 45% local match basis to be earmarked for the design and construction of the Waimea Wastewater Treatment Plant, reclaimed water distribution system improvements. The Director of Economic Development requests council approval to receive and spend grant funds from the Garden Island Resource Conservation and Development, Incorporated, in the amount of $40,183 due to the resignation of the Sunshine Market Monitor in July 2015. The funds will be returned to the county's general fund. The Director of Economic Development requests council approval to apply for, receive, and spend funds from the Global Philanthropy Partnership in the amount of $5,000 for a peer exchange to take place during September 2016, allowing city staff from other municipalities in the United States to travel to Kauai and assist in preparing a scope of work for future climate action plans. The Director of Economic Development requests council approval to apply for, receive, and spend funds in a total amount of $300,000 from the Hawaii Tourism Authority for cultural support and to run a 3-month summer North Shore shuttle program. Under committee reports, the Planning Committee approved Bill Number 2601, Draft 1, for an ordinance amending the county code relating to additional dwelling units on other than residentially zoned lots, and this is also under bills for second reading. The Budget and Finance Committee approved Bill 2632 for an ordinance relating to the operating budget of the county for the fiscal year July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016, revising amounts estimated in the general fund and the golf fund. And this is for the employees' retirement system, excess pension costs in the amount of $330,096. And this is also under bills for second reading. Under resolutions is resolution number 2016-42, proposing a charter amendment relating to the institution of a council-manager form of government. And this was deferred from May 18th. Also under resolutions is number 2016-48, proposing a charter amendment to establish a county roads resurfacing reconstruction backlog fund. The council is not finished with this meeting by approximately 1:30 p.m. It will recess for a public hearing on bill number 2629, a bill for an ordinance to amend the county code relating to smoking in a motor vehicle, and also bill number 2633 for an ordinance amending the county code relating to the beneficial tax rate for property use for long-term affordable rentals. After the public hearings, council will reconvene to complete any unfinished business. For more information, visit the county's website. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.
And a great show, guys. And you are listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, or Kauai's community radio station. And be sure and stay tuned for Jazz with John coming up next. We've got some great jazz numbers. And Jazz with John is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Coffee Company, Kamau Ukulele, and Tiki Aniki.
Kauai Coffee Company. The Kauai Coffee Estate is located on Highway 540. Walking tour and samples of all of our coffees available. 100% Island Estate grown Kauai coffee. More information online at kauaicoffee.com.
Kamoa Ukulele Company, dedicated to building high-quality bell-tone instruments. Built with a one-player-at-a-time philosophy, from student models up to custom masterpieces, Kamoa Ukulele Company, a family-owned business, supports KKCR. 652-9999 or online at kamoaukulelecompany.com.
Tiki Niki, Kauai's newest tiki bar and restaurant featuring fresh fruit, vintage cocktails, farm and boat-to-table cuisine, and late-night dining. Open 11:30 a.m. to midnight in the Princeville Shopping Center, 431-4242.
And a big mahalo for supporting Jazz with John and KKCR, Honolulu, KAQA, Kauai Community Radio. And here's our theme song, Yesterday's. And I've got some Yesterday's samples. Some tracks that were recorded about 80 years ago, I know you'll enjoy. So stay tuned for Jazz with John.